Good morning. Hello. The first 6 seconds into the show.
Good morning. Someone's been in a downward spiral.
This was not the album for this week, but it is what happened. Welcome to the No Skips podcast. I am Lisa. That is Jack.
I feel great.
I feel tired.
Maybe I'm energized by
this.
The ninest of nails. Who knows, man?
The ninest of nails?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Let it happen.
Help me.
Help me.
We are covering Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral this week. Oh,
landmark boy. 1994 album.
March 8th, 1994.
Yoosh. Okay, first out of the gate, and I stop myself. Here's what happens. We'll be recording, or we will be talking about recording for the show, and then we'll stop ourselves. Because for you, I know some of you are not the most happy about our lack of preparedness. We're parents. Give us a break. We're just trying to have fun. Listen to some albums we maybe otherwise wouldn't listen to. Mm-hmm. Or you know how you tell your friends, right? That's this show. You tell your friends. They say, oh, Nine Inch Nails, buddy. That was probably, you gotta hear it. And you're like, absolutely. And then you never do it. This show is us going through and making good on some of those promises.
Trying.
Hey, we did.
We're attempting to make good on a promise that you said a while back. Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing.
So what I appreciate, and so I started to say this to you, and then I'm like, no, shut. We gotta hold it for the show. We're gonna have this conversation for the listeners.
Okay.
And what I said was, this album totally unlocks a certain understanding of a certain person, probably in high school, that you went to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Went to with. And you're like, I get it now. Because when people loved this album, they also loved a corresponding black t-shirt that they wore basically threadbare.
Yeah.
It was their
and
uniform.
Now it's their lovey. They carry it around in the back pocket of their Dockers, their Dockers pants.
They still inside their soul is black.
I was reflecting on this because I thought about that. I was like, I don't remember a lot of my friends liked a little bit heavier stuff. I can't recall any of them being hardcore Nine Inch Nails fans. And there's only like one or two people that I can recall being like in high school with that did like Nine Inch Nails. I was just like, yes, this explains a lot.
Yeah.
This explains a lot about you, my friend. Like the kind of guy that you're like, listen to me. This album,
let's hear what's up.
This album is, in my opinion, is hard as it was to get through this album multiple times. It is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It is a masterpiece.
I think you can say that.
I think I described it. What did I say? I said it's a masterpiece if you surrender to it. If you allow
nice.
Yourself to surrender. Because
I like that.
Because even last night, you and I listened to it on our surround sound in the dark. Oh my gosh.
A 5.1 system talking, in the dark.
Not talking about it to each other, but listening to it, and I was really struggling. But I was like, towards the end, I really had. It was like when you're in a bad situation, and you take your body stays present, but your mind leaves. That's what was happening towards the end of this album. this was a traumatic event for me. My body remained, and my soul was like, I'm going to go into a safe place.
Oh my God.
And I'm going to come back because I have,
it's heavy,
dark corners.
Right.
I have dark corners, and this album still pressed a little too hard in places. I was just like, I can't meet you there, buddy.
And I think that's part of the intent, really, is that he was conjuring that not only for himself, but I think that's where it reaches its audience. So a couple numbers for you. Pretty Hate Machine, mm-hmm. their opener, first album, 1989, does a million copies. Pretty great for, like, you know, that.
Well, in 89, that kind of sound, yeah.
Exactly.
Was that The Perfect Drug? Was that on that?
No, that's much later. Much later. Okay. Head Like a Hole. That was the lead off single in the first track of Pretty Hate Machine. Okay. I listened to it. I listened to Downward Spiral maybe for the third time and then dipped in on Pretty Hate Machine.
Okay.
And Pretty Hate Machine is pretty good. but it is totally 1989. This album, other than because everyone heard Closer until they were sick of it, this album to me doesn't feel dated.
Nothing. That's exactly what I said. I said nothing about this album dates it. Nothing.
And
nothing.
So it's crazy for in a scant 5 years and in between. And by the way, Downward Spiral does 4 million copies.
Mm-hmm. Debuted second, number two.
Yeah. Second only to Super Unknown, Soundgarden's album. It's what, just.
Sorry, Soundgarden. But
1994
this
was. Oh, but 1994 was absolutely bananas. Weezer's Blue Album, Vitalogy from Pearl Jam. Oh gosh, now I'm slipping on Super Unknown. Mm-hmm. It was just a banner year for just an explosion of music. And even in that crowded scene, this very difficult, very dark album shows up. And he had, so the second proper album, I think there are two EPs that sort of start to
Broken,
one of them, I want to say. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not gonna pretend. But just the idea of, I like this because this is kind of like how you talk about the second song, right? Everyone can kind of come out of the gate. What are you going to hit with the second one? And that, of course, is all the talk about a sophomore album, right? Sophomore albums make or break a band because it's either usually you use up all your good ideas on the first one, or not good ideas, or all the ideas you've been kind of saving up and being like, here's my pretty ponies. Don't you like them? Most people can make it out of the first album. But to hit in with a second album and be like, oh no, actually, this is going to make the first album seemed kind of quaint and dated,
right.
Is really extraordinary. And also, no duh, he's going to do movie soundtracks. This whole album is practically a movie soundtrack by itself.
Yeah.
Like the depth and the layering.
At some point,
it flows.
At some point, I said that listening to this album was like, this is like the soundtrack to the worst part of like when the night stuff happens in Silent Hill. I was like, this is what it felt like. It was like, this is like having to sit there for an hour in the dark of silence. What do you call that? Then whenever they flip over, well, you know what I'm talking about.
Anyway, yeah,
yeah. So let me get to my notes because I have notes actually written about this. It debuted at number two, which is wild for this.
It is wild.
It's a concept album, this time of a man going from like losing his mind with self-destructive tendencies and sexual deviancy to the end, which results in his suicide. Sorry for the spoiler alert.
I also feel like that's a little oversold. I just think because it's so coherent, it reads like a concept album. I don't know. I think that's also a little bit of a back solve. Anyway, that's just me.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Interesting side note here is that in 92, Trent Reznor moved into the home where the Sharon Tate murders and everything happened there.
150 CLO Drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was where the album was recorded. And so,
which he initially was like, is it that house? That's so weird. No, I didn't move here for that. That's
that would be crass.
And then later. So yeah, to get that out of the way, I think that's really fascinating because he recorded several of the EPs and yes, recorded this and the early Marilyn Manson American Family stuff here, which makes some kind of sense, but it also really helps underscore that like you wanted to give some of these people a wedgie and they have gotten wedgies in their time. And that's part of why they have
a deep, dark that wedgie.
The wedgie of the soul is Trent Reznor's problem. Probably not anymore.
He loves it though. He loves that.
Or loved it. But see, that's the thing. So, okay. I dipped on this a little bit when we were talking about it, but the guys that I knew who were hardcore Nine Inch Nails guys had, just like any band, right? Just like how, like Pumpkins, right? Pumpkins are like, the early hard stuff is the best. And then he started getting on a piano and I'm like, whatever, dude. Like a lot of the Nine Inch Nails guys I know, I mean, again, without, you know, taking notes on it back when, were like Pretty Hate Machine, Downward Spiral is like my Bible if I believed in anything. But then once he was like, I'm going to live healthier and maybe try and stay off drugs. And you're like, you sell out. Like,
I love it so much better when you're depressed and jerking off into your own black soul. Duh. If you are not familiar with this album, let's just, so for probably our Davids of the world, Closer, a song I covered on 90s Court because the video is fucking buck wild.
Yeah.
One of the most insane things you'll ever watch. Like, there's some shocking things on the internet. This one still holds up almost 30 years later.
Yeah, it takes it there.
And so this album has Closer on it. And if you know Closer, you know it's a weird, wild situation. The rest of the album is so much worse. And I didn't know. I thought, in my head, I didn't know. I only knew Closer. So in my head, I was like, Closer is the darkest.
Right.
That is not the darkest. Closer is like a cakewalk. It's like
the feeling when you realize Closer is in fact the most commercially viable.
Yeah. This is the single, huh? Yeah. What else is hidden back there? You don't want to know.
Don't come back. Don't come back behind
also,
the counter.
Also, don't Google Lemon Party. Just don't. Yeah. None of this
don't,
is.
No,
is
don't
this.
Do this.
So it is a dark, grimy, sick, scary album. I don't know.
So Trent Reznor moves in and creates a studio out of the Sharon Tate murder house.
No big deal.
And more or less proceeds to make exactly the album that you'd think that the vibes that house would give you. And also but also
the
their
sexual nature, was there a lot of
Well, that's just
Trent Reznor being Trent Reznor. LOL.
Yeah. So
that's just the res.
Just the res. Yeah, it's but my understanding also in terms of like his all of that, and that's why I have trouble with the concept album appellation is that.
Was it not? But I thought that was handed down from Trent himself.
Sure. That's why I don't believe it is because he was like, haha, wouldn't it be? And this is what happens, right? This can happen with artists. You're like, haha, weird. Wouldn't it be funny? Or, you know, not that he would say it would be funny. He's like, I'm writing this character who is super depressed and has had trouble with drugs. Well, if you're super depressed and have trouble with drugs, it's not really a concept, is it?
It's more like an autobiography.
Now, yeah. Cut into influences briefly. Another album you probably wouldn't like. David Bowie's Low was a huge, huge influence on this album. Low is an incredible album. David Bowie lived in L.A. and as like the classic newest song on that kind of theme is Kanye's No More Parties in L.A. And it's basically him to Kim just begging, please, baby, no more parties in L.A. Just because it's taking its toll. And when you're the kind of person that people will just hand up free drugs to, and if you do drugs, that's a problem.
Right.
And so David Bowie was like, the septum in my nose is going to dissolve if I do any more coke. I'm moving. I'm pulling a Geographic, as they say in AA terms, which is I know I need to get clean. I know I have all these problems. So here's how I'm going to address the solution. I'm going to move somewhere very different. So Bowie moved to Berlin.
Okay.
And he created some incredible introspective and also experimental albums. And that's where Low really does, not only as the name kind of suggests, Bowie's like, shit, I moved to Berlin. This is full of Germans. Why didn't no one tell me the city's full of Germans?
Damn it.
And
who would have thought?
He made some great music, but it's also like, I listened to Pretty Hate Machine. And I listened to Low today after listening to.
How's your heart? How's your
I'm
soul?
I'm having a great time.
Are
because,
you?
Yeah. No. It was a blast because there are so many clear and Reznor was straight up about it. He's like, I listened to Iggy Pop. I listened to especially Low really hit me, and you see the DNA. One of my favorite songs from Low is Breaking Glass, and Bowie says, don't look at the carpet. I drew something awful on it. See? And then there's a discordant note that plays. And then he talks about like breaking glass and like just messing up the place in this sort of quaint 70s. He's like, he's acting out. He's starting to lose it. And you take that sort of sentiment of like a guy unraveling and a lot of instrumental interludes. Take that 24 years, or well, I'm not roughly 20 years. I forget where in the 70s Low lands. I think it's more like 76, 77.
Okay.
The point is roughly 20 years. You actually, it does. It there's a real straight line to Downward Spiral. So that's cool. For background, there are albums that you can listen to, and you're like, oh my gosh, like how cool is that? Also, by the way, to be like, hey, I was influenced by this album, and then people could listen to that album and be like, Were you though?
You sure about that?
You sure about that? No, but you can. You, I, to me, you can hear it.
Yeah, Let's get into the album.
Let's do it.
Let's get into the tracks. Track number one, Mr. Self-Destruct. That pretty much puts it down. So this opens up with a very unsettling sound, which I at first was led to believe by the sound of it that it was just a man being spanked. And I did, yes. I did some research, and it's not. It is
no,
a sample.
It's a sample.
It's a sample from George
THX1138.
Right, right. And so it's a man in that scene. It's a man being beaten by a prison guard, and so it's a great use of the sample. It's very dark. It can be taken either way, however you feel it, but it's very unsettling. I remember trying to listen to this in front of one of our kids, just to have it on in the background. I was like, nope, not even first 10 seconds. I know this album's off. Never mind. So it's extremely punishing. It's the exact right introduction to this very dark album. There's a lot of foreshadowing here for exactly how dark and twisted this album's going to be. Yeah.
But also a cool time capsule of 1994 in that the sample that they're able to pull, you don't have DVDs. Like you can practically hear the audio loss of it being like a real media clip of THX1138. Like it's a very lossy, which makes it the degradation of the sound clip makes it worse.
Right. In my head, what it sounded like was someone on a computer with speakers somewhere else in the room listening, watching porn.
Yeah. It has a very porny, it has a very dirty vibe to it. And that's, you're
it
like,
sets the stage.
Yeah, it does.
So I Googled what the sample was or the intro was, and I learned that. I was like, that's as dark as what I had envisioned. So that's,
it's a nerd nod. It kind of ticks all boxes. It's like someone's getting beaten. Mm-hmm. It's a nerd nod. And yeah, it just has overtones. But also it does that really nice trick of like Dance Yourself Clean to pick the first thing that came to mind, which is a really good trick of
Dance making... Yourself Clean by LCD Sound System, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know.
Yes, thank you. Of making the listener focus in on a very narrow kind of bandwidth, or like in this case, because it's such a lossy sample, you kind of like lean in and be like, what am I hearing? And then when the song kicks in at full volume, it's a shock.
It's like a heart attack. Yeah.
And that heart attack really doesn't end for about an hour.
Yep. It just gets worse.
you're like, oh, I'm nostalgic for the earlier part of this heart attack.
I missed the part where it sounded like a man was being beaten erotically. I missed that. Can we go back to that?
There was at least the implication he might have been okay with it.
Right. But wait, there's more.
Oh, wait.
Some of the lines from this that are really aggressive and insane is just, I am the voice inside your head and I control you. I'm the lover in your bed and I control you. I am the sex that you provide and I control you. I am the hate that you try to hide and I control you. So there's a lot already in your face about this is going to be aggressive. This is going to be painful.
Right.
Let's get through this. Track two, Piggy. This has like a weird down tempo sound to it, which I did not expect for track two of this album.
It almost sounds like what threw me the first time hearing it. It has an almost exact, and I have to believe that's intentional, almost exact like a bad karaoke rendition of a real song, like the way that drum starts in.
Okay, I can't quite remember how the drum went, but yeah.
It's just the beginning of the song has a sort of like, it's like is this meant to be lousy? And then it starts again, and then once again, something that it hit me there, and it hit me several times throughout. Again, that very cinematic presentation. Pacing is incredible on this album because various points, if it went sometimes even 5 or 10 seconds longer, you're like, that's it. I'm out. You cannot punish me anymore. And then write it when you're about to reach your breaking point.
Tallahassee. And then you throw your safe word out there.
They give you
a warm place.
Yeah.
So apparently Richard Patrick of Filter was a guitarist for Nine Inch Nails for about 4 years. And during this time frame when he was with the band, his nickname was Piggy. And Trent Reznor was kind of privy to the idea that he was working on his own stuff and was kind of pissed about it. And I believe this track...
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, was about him. And also, I read this little interesting note. The drum solo at the back end of the song was performed by Trent Reznor himself, and it's his only live drum performance with Nine Inch Nails.
Huh.
Interesting. A little tidbit right there.
A little something. Back up with Mr. Self-Destruct. His name escapes me, but the guitarist from King Crimson.
Couldn't say.
was in one day. On. He recorded for at least three of the Nine Inch Nails albums, and it's super cool because you just listened. Like, Trent Reznor was coming from Pretty Hate Machine, which is very sort of synth driven.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed skeptical about like adding guitars. And so they talked about like what they would do is record for like 25, 30 minutes and just sort of try out things. And he'd like gives almost like stage directions, like try for texture. Like let's hear like rhythmic, or let's just like play for noise and play for these other sort of discordant effects, mm-hmm. which had tremendously gifted, especially from that 70s prog rock school. Those guys could always conjure insane stuff out of a guitar, but often weren't called to. And I think that's a really cool thing about a veteran guitarist being able to just be like, hey, give me like the nastiest shit you can get out of the guitar. And he's like, finally someone wanted to.
Thank you.
Someone wanted this. And so that's, yeah, there's that texture shows up a lot. And you'll hear it. And that's another part. I mean, because Reznor is a complete studio nerd. This album was fully digital years before a lot of people were that sort of digitally oriented.
Yeah.
And so the manipulation, the depth, all these sort of the cut up of samples and reworking of stuff is ever present. And again, doesn't feel old. It doesn't feel like, oh, well, he's behind the curve now. He's just sort of chopping around on,
no.
on
this could, you know. This capacitist is stuff that I hear being dropped now.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Heresy.
This is the gets the... I love it. I love it because it is so close. Again, as a good Catholic boy, this is like the interior monologue of a lot of kids I knew in school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a rage, and sometimes justified, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes at some really nasty experiences at the hands of, you know, some member of it or some representative, worst of all, of organized religion, and it just sort of spills out. And there's a certain kind of like... There's a very teenage quality to a lot of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't still be out there sometimes, you know? Like, right. that's the amazing fine line this album walks to me. Is that like, I was like, this is some real teenage shit you're going through. And yet you're making it work.
Kind of. I don't know. You say teenage, but I mercifully did not know teenagers that felt a lot of... Well, I mean, there's a lot of battling with religion and God in this album. However, yeah. the sexual overtones are the ones that distract me so much because sure. they're so powerful and scary in their right. own ways. And that to me is just like, I do not know a teenager that was like that. Thank goodness. But
I would say that they were just never able to articulate any of that. They wanted right. to though. And that's why I think this album, when they heard it, really felt like, oh my gosh, someone else has these thoughts, has these feelings.
Mm-hmm. God is dead and no one cares. If there is a hell, I'll see you there.
one of his pithier couplets. I mean, it's Nietzsche, right? Nietzsche, God right. is dead. But I mean, make no mistake. If I actually listened to this album in high school, I wouldn't have been equipped for it. I would have been very upset and mm-hmm. offended. Which is kind of, I'm sure, what he wanted out of it. But right. it's like, here it's just like, artistic expression, man. Like, take it there. Don't do the, like, dancing around the issue version of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Dial it to 11. Just,
yeah, he's you like, can't, okay.
I'll do it.
Say no more, fam. According to an interview in 1994, Trent Reznor explained that he was exploring some of the paranoias he had as a sexually active person during the age of AIDS. And so that line in Heresy, he tries to tell me what I put inside of me. He made a virus that would kill off all the swine.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes.
that's my ASMR for the night. Whatever that. Yikes.
Put that on the soundboard.
Let's move on to March of the Pigs. This is a wildly fast and chaotic mess.
This is cool. This is another production note where even though this was sampled from live drums,
mm-hmm.
I believe that it was played on a keyboard, which is why it has this insanely... Because it blurs the line. And he talked about that in production notes. And it's so cool because, again, it still holds up. Where it's like, you're not sure. It feels like live drumming, but it's so frenetic and so brutalizing. It blurs the line where you're like, mm-hmm. is this a drum machine? What's going on? And well, it's sampled live drums.
I believe I read that this was one of their fastest songs, if not the fastest. Damn, I think no 269 noise beats per minute. Also, I immediately noticed the 7/8 time signature.
Nice. Because I the never verses, know my time
because something was off about the verse, and I was like, okay, hold on, sit with the time signature for a minute. And it's I read it's 3 measures of 7/8 before hopping into 1 quick measure of the traditional 4/4 time, which effectively is a 29/8 time signature, which is insane.
Because
I was like, something's fucky. And I listened to this, and I was like, okay, there. Yeah, someone else online had talked about it, and I was like, oh, okay, yes.
Sorry, before I forget,
no, go ahead.
Someone else was pointing out that, because there's a lot of pig talk. Pig. I forget where I saw it, but my understanding was that pig or piggy was one of his pet names for talking about the fans as well.
That's not very nice.
It isn't, but...
What are our fan names? Fans called...
I'm not going to go there. We can't do this in the middle of the downward spiral.
I think we can.
I think we can.
Maybe we'll wrap up the show with what we call our fans. Yeah. Well, yeah, in my opinion, this is the song that probably felt the most teenage to me if there were one on this album, because this felt like talking about everyone and like their fakeness is kind of like sense of mass conformity.
Right.
And that's, you know, effectively peeling back the layers and whatnot. Doesn't it make you feel better?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, like you're the one that like you can kind of see and you can stand up against it. It's like, all right, shut up. let's move on. Let's move on. Let's open the curtains a little bit further. Let's go to closer. 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 Not closer. Closer Always time. This is Nine Inch Nails, and this is not the song you thought I was talking about. Closer, not closer, you asshole. Closer.
What you don't get without it being on the album is how smoothly we segue. Yeah, that's a right. really nice transition.
It's very good. A little too good. A little too spoopy.
A sample from
Ooh.
Nightclubbin' for Iggy Pop. Iggy Pop wrote a song. That's really funny, because Iggy Pop wrote a song that was like, it's really annoying to go to clubs in Berlin with David Bowie, because everyone goes, that's David Bowie. And he's just like, all right. So that was his. And so it was really funny to see the varying degrees, just like the I don't live in Sharon Tate's house. That's weird to, yeah, I lived in Sharon Tate's house. And which, by the way, was demolished shortly after
I
moved out.
So
good for them, for that at least. But you read... Reznor being like, oh, it was definitely influenced by nightclubbing. He sampled.
Right. What was the sample? The kick.
It's that big bass hit. It's the backbone of the song is a modulated version of from nightclubbing.
Cool. I'm gonna hear that afterwards. I didn't look up the samples for this song. I probably should have. Interesting.
They're not that many, but yeah, they're choice. Yeah.
So this is probably the most popular track, if not for Hurt, but the one everyone knows the music video for, the scariest shit in the universe, very upsetting. Scariest sexy song ever recorded.
And it's fascinating to try and kind of connect to that, because it's so like theatrical and it's kind of goofy, I was thinking about that after listening to it, just the goofy, help me. Like
yeah.
In this song, we're going to do the like that little vocal, but like everything works. This song shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. You can't put that on the air in 1994.
But they did. But they 9 did. Years old listening to this song, watching that music video on MTV while I'm getting ready for breakfast in school.
Hey, Mom, come look at this.
Hey.
Sorry.
Was that guy spinning? I don't know. What's that monkey doing? Is he okay?
Oh, no.
Yeah, the exact wrong age, with no context for Nine Inch Nails, with no context for
oh
the
my
album,
gosh.
This song was crazy. Yeah. And like you said, it was funny. I want to fuck you like an animal. Now, I mean, mind you, I at 9 probably wasn't giving that line much thought, wasn't really thinking about it that much. But knowing that there was something not right about what was happening here, not only visually, but musically, it's very...
Mm-hmm.
Uneasy, unsettled. I mean, it's the whole fucking MO of this album.
Yes.
But in context for the rest of the album, like I said, this is actually one of the lighter ones. And, but the that I want to fuck you like an animal. I want to feel you from the inside. That's it. That's in, I mean, he's being honest about the sexual deviancy here and like this just like violence in it and
yeah.
And kind of separation from it. But like,
right.
I don't know.
In many moments, especially on Pretty Hate Machine, which still bears some of the marks, the tool marks of like the influences of the 80s and the more like just 80s sounding acts of the time. When he doesn't land it, or at least from a modern perspective, right, listening to it, he has similar sentiments that come off very corny and very okay. dorky. But the upshot is that sort of searing openness and honesty, mm-hmm. right? Because people have formulated similar sentiments, but has never, I think, been laid bare before, maybe not even since, quite the same way,
right.
And that gives closer this. Or not only,
at least if it was, it was never given this much attention. It was not exactly. this popular.
But what kills me is in my mind, I still always hear the radio edit because I never listened to this album on a CD. So I still always, I heard that radio edit so many times, and somehow it seems more potent with fuck being ducked.
Just, yeah.
Like just because it lands it so much harder, it makes it sharper to hear. It's crazy. I heard this in high school. I heard this on the radio that this able to be played. We're all for censorship here on the show now. By the way,
I want a fun. You like an animal.
I want to
hug you from the inside. I love animals.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Don't do drugs.
Dare.
I have to think that for anyone who's into BDSM or any kind of culture like this, that this has to be a little bit like an anthem
sure.
for you.
Sure, just play it on repeat.
What club has this going? What club doesn't?
Yeah. Everyone bouncers like, I hate this album. I hear it bleeding through the doors every day, every night. Oh my gosh.
Closer. Ruiner. To me, Ruiner... The Ruiner in this context feels like God.
Mm.
And he's already defied God in Heresy. And here it comes off to me like he's calling out God and right. implying like, I could do this.
Right.
I can get to your level. How'd you get so big? How'd you get so strong? How'd it get so hard? How'd it get so long? I'd never heard the song. Then had not actually... heard the lyrics until I read it, and I was just like, oh shit, man, you gotta stop. Like, this is too much, because he's basically in some of the lyrics implying that he can get to that level through sex and violence.
Right.
And what do you think?
It all runs together.
What do you
like,
think?
Very much like Pretty Hate Machine, there's the continuity of I and you. He uses, I think, 143 times is the number, I think, on this album.
Okay. That he says
I. Like, he talks about himself a lot, but it's also...
quote-unquote himself, yeah, which is definitely just himself.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, again, there's an honesty, there's a directness there. It gets tiring, but then it really should, because that's also kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
There is a kind of, like, you're going to have to go through this with me,
right.
like, quality yep. to it. And yeah. I think that's what, with Ruiner... And then this section, because there's definitely like...
Ooh, this section.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's definitely... Also, once again, clarified by the vinyl.
Right.
The from closer on to warm place, I would say, is maybe the most... Which is interesting, because an album normally it's like, okay... Stick the landing, but also have a rip-roaring intro... Maybe put your slower middle songs in the middle.
Nope.
Here it's like you're gonna have to get through hell.
This is like entering a one of those like haunted houses in Halloween.
It's a really like, punishing midsection.
You signed up for this, but now you can't leave until I'm done.
Yeah,
with
you. You sign the waiver and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are clowns in the other room. Yeah, they're wearing dills It's going to be awful. You're going to hate this.
I hate it too. Why did I do this?
I work here.
Why did I make this house?
The Becoming. So for our listeners, this is funny. I was listening to, because it is required to listen to the albums on headphones. I was listening to the very first time I ever listened to this was on headphones while I was sewing at night, because that's my job on the side. And this song came on and I was like, I have to walk away.
Wow.
I was like, I paused and I was like, this has to stop.
Right.
Like this is the Becoming is when I really couldn't take it anymore. Wow. Because the backtrack here has like some kind of garbled screaming, like women or people screaming. And I don't even know if it's exactly that or if it's just some really fucked up synth sound, but.
Right. It's creative and it is. Like he Reznor talking about production in various points, he talks about like from the first album, it's like, where do you go from here? Do you just go harder? Do you just go faster?
Mm-hmm.
There's a losing game doing that. So he's like, I want to find ways to sort of like catch you off guard.
Well, you did it. Good job.
I mean, really, it is.
This track was upsetting. I can't even. Did I write anything about the lyrics? A little bit here and there. I'm telling you, the screeching.
Yeah.
The wailing.
Yeah.
It was hard to take. It was really hard to take.
There's something about, because it's not like it's not well incorporated. It is, but the whole soundscape. The fascinating thing for me, being a computer nerd who did software games and Reznor worked with id, most famously on their 1996, really, I think actually their only one he worked with. But so kind of a precursor to his film career, he did the soundtrack, an ambient, scary place soundtrack to Quake, 1996. So 2 years after this. And there is a photo that is like the peak everything of 90s nerddom is Carmack, the programmer from id Software, standing next to Trent Reznor. And they're both giving a kind of face like, yeah, this is super cool, like who I'm standing with and standing next to Robin Williams, who is a huge computer nerd. And it's maybe I'm inventing Carmack being in the photo, but I think he is. I think it's the three of them.
Okay.
But you look this photo up and it's just hilarious because you've never seen such different people from different walks of life all being weirdly in awe of each other, like who they're hanging out with.
Right.
So, but a lot of the production on the Quake soundtrack, which is no lyrics and it's mostly ambient and just menace. But I remember being shocked at like some of the textures in there. And it's like, of course, coming back to Downward Spiral, of course, he's generating all that kind of incredible unease in his work. Because right. Downward Spiral, that's kind of its stock and trade.
Mm-hmm.
And very much so on this track.
Very much so. Yeah, this is where I decided I might not be able to do this, but it mercifully chills out with an acoustic guitar situation about midway through the track.
Right.
After some really punishing few minutes.
Yeah, I'm looking up the lyrics. I'm trying to remember which.
All right, the one that got me was this reads to me a bit more like an addiction rearing its head, and how uncomfortable it is to live with the need for more and what it's doing to you. And the line that I wrote down was like, I can try to get away, but I've strapped myself in. I can try to scratch away the sound in my ears. And so that's what it kind of feels like to me. And that would make sense that the music, the backtrack, the wailing on the front end would be so uncomfortable, because how uncomfortable is it to be addicted to a drug that you cannot have and you just want more, and the need for it rearing its head all the time must feel unbearable.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So, and yeah, you really conveyed that, whether or not you wanted to. So,
I believe he did.
I do not want this.
Is this the one that I'm trying to? There's a very telling lyric I'm trying to remember, because it's like which deeply unpleasant song and what subject.
It's a good question.
I feel like that's saying the quiet part loud on this verse, title. I do not want this.
Right. I do not want this. Yeah. This one, I'm always falling down the same hill, bamboo puncturing this skin, and nothing comes bleeding out of me, just like a waterfall I'm drowning in.
Okay. You know, this one really sort of popped. Okay. This is the one I was thinking of.
It is. Okay.
It popped out at me because the exacting nature of screaming, "Don't you tell me how to feel."
Yeah.
Because that, again, privilege, I will admit my own privilege there. I lived in a happy home. Yeah, I had my ups and downs, but it was a very stable and overall very happy house. And the trauma that only later, you know, because when you're in high school, to me, you just see, oh, my dorky friend who's very quiet and rage-filled must just love black jeans and Nine Inch Nails t-shirts. And it's like, no, there's something behind it. And the ways that sort of bubbles out and the rage that comes from these sort of things comes from trying to articulate these incredibly traumatic and difficult or stymieing places in their life. And so that was like, if I can imagine like one, like they're just screaming and like sobbing and like the cathartic kind of singing along. Cause you know how many like scream crying sing alongs this album has had.
Whew, stop. Yeah, you're right.
But the one that really stuck out to me is later is he has another one of his like sort of demiurgic fantasist, like taking over everything. Like I'm God. Right. He says, the lyric goes, "I want to know everything. I want to be everywhere." You know, again, godlike omnipotence.
Mm-hmm.
"I want to fuck everyone in the world." And you're like, okay, where's he gonna go from here? And then the very telling line: "I want to do something that matters."
Yeah.
One of these is not like the others in terms of expression.
I want to fuck everything. All the things.
Please.
I want to make a change in this neighborhood.
Please.
I want to run for the HOA board.
And that is, I think, one of the best. Again, it kind of gets at why this album is still very upsetting and yet still works. Because a lot of people can be crass. A lot of people can throw horrible lyrics. It kind of got very popular, especially in that new metal era. Like throwing terrible lyrics around was like, like, yeah, let's all do this. This is going to be awesome.
Come on, Korn. Come on.
So to do that and to sort of have these kind of just messy everything, but then to pull back into something that is, it's just like it's real and it's sad. Mm-hmm. Like, I just need to connect. I need to connect with people. Mm-hmm. I need to be seen. I need to have my feelings heard.
Right.
And so this comes out as rage rather than, you know, the kind of color du jour of psychotherapy talk. But whatever.
Big man with a gun.
Now, here we go. You talk about messy lyrics.
You want to talk about messy lyrics indeed. Do you want me to just read the verse?
Just get in there, because the song's not long.
I mean, a big man, yes I am, and I've got a big gun. Got me a big old dick, and I like to have fun. Held against your forehead, and I'll make you suck it. Sorry, any parents are listening. And maybe I'll put a hole in your head. You know, just for the fuck of it. Oh, I'm sorry. In my head, I read that as just so I can fuck it. I'm so glad it wasn't that line.
Whew.
My brain did not do me any favors. Man, this, so yikes.
Yikes.
That's a yikes for me. Big man with a big gun.
My understanding is that in 2009, as a surprise, I think it was like nearly a New Year's show, they played Downward Spiral top to bottom live.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I thought you were going to say they played this on like a New Year's Eve rock. Rocking New Year's Eve.
9, please just make it stop. I just wish this were
I'm
over.
Hard as fucking steel. I'm every inch a man. 2, 1.
No, the joke being that like this and Heresy, but like Heresy got played like a little bit and they're like, maybe we don't play this one live.
Yeah.
And this is the other song that kind of just wasn't really a thing for live performances.
Oh, you mean like with lines like, I'm going to come all over you?
Yeah, I don't know.
And then chorus? Maybe.
Maybe you don't want to find out what happens with the fan energy when you're singing. Maybe this is not.
You don't want to look at the audience and be like, don't look at them. Don't look at what they're doing. Don't look. What are they doing when you say the line, I got me a big old dick held against your forehead and I'll make you suck it. What are they doing there? Don't look at the audience. Aye, 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 aye. Look, don't listen to this song. Maybe do.
This is the one, again, It fits. However, did it really need to be here? Probably not. It's a long enough album. If
it is a long album, and this one here was, I think at this point I was just like, I'm ready to stop being shocked now.
Right.
And they were like,
no, you're not.
No. Well, actually they are, because he gave us A Warm Place.
Right.
Right after this.
Yeah, and maybe, but because this song is like, what, 2:30 maybe?
I think it's like 1 something. It's really short. It's really short, but it's, I mean, that's all you need.
An eternity.
Yes. Listening to this last night in the dark, I was like, I cannot. And then we got A Warm Place.
In The Warm Place. The most needed Tree Fingers ever.
Not Tree Fingers. You need, not Tree Fingers. This is a mint on a bloody pillow for you. This hotel's fucked up, but they gave me a mint.
And this, wait, let's open it up. Is it also just blood inside the little cover? No, actually it is a mint. No, it looks pretty good.
It's one of those little Andes mints.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Triggered. I get so sick on those.
They're amazing.
They're not. So we have Warm Place, this instrumental track where we get this nice little reprieve, and then we move to Eraser.
But it's like a reset. It's so nice in the because in another album, you'd be like, fine. Like, don't put me to sleep. This is the first time that kind of ambient, very Eno-esque, you know, cinematic track. First time you hear that and be like, oh, thank goodness.
Right.
I'm going to sit here for a while because I need to drink this in to get through the final climb. Yep.
Yeah, the final climb of this horrible roller coaster of sex and violence and scariness. Eraser has a lot of simple but cutting lyrics. Start building up from the quiet of A Warm Place, and then it's like from the needing / wanting of someone, then having them, fucking them, then hurting them, then realizing
but it transitions out of A Warm Place with the right.
I don't remember at this point. I was mind and soul were separated.
To me, is one of the most interesting, like. Because it's like, yeah, industrial. And like he does get industrial. Like sometimes, like comically so, like pistons and like hydraulic kind of sound effects. And it's like, oh, this is industrial music. It sounds like industrial sounds, right?
Right.
But there's a really unexpected texture with the, like, it sounds like mouthing or mouthpiece kind of sounds. I think that's here. I could be wrong. I believe that's
I don't remember the
outro. But I could be wrong.
So yeah, it's like I said, it's like having someone then using them, and then kind of like realizing it's you that's the problem and turning it back on you. So the lyrics are taste you, fuck you, use you, scar you, break you, and then it goes into lose me, hate me, smash me, erase me, and then kill me over and over and over again through the end.
Very downward spiral in terms of like, here I'm gonna lash out at other people, and then eventually, of course, it always comes back to self-disgust and self-loathing.
Right. Damn. Reptile. Woo. Reptile. I think this was the one that surprised me more than Closer, because I thought, again, in my naive little brain, that that Closer was gonna be
worse.
Yeah, Closer was going to be it, but this is a raunchy fucking track. The first verse is insanely sexual, talking about this woman, my precious whore, spreading herself open to let the insects in. So I guess maybe allusion also to perhaps the AIDS. Did we say pandemic? What would they call it? AIDS? What do they call it?
Epidemic.
Epidemic, yeah. Not pandemic.
It didn't quite meet read. Yeah.
Yeah. AIDS epidemic and whatnot, but then also, you know, STDs and whatnot. And then seeds from 1,000 others drip down from within. It's like, all right.
Yeah. All that's right. Gross, dude.
Pretty insane imagery there. It was a, oh, my beautiful liar. Oh, my precious whore. My disease, my infection. I am so impure. And then a few seconds later, give it. Just like, ugh.
Yikes.
Listen. Listen.
Listen. You need to calm down.
Listen. Trent, listen.
Again, flight attendant. Sir? Sir?
I'm going to need you to put your pants back on.
Sir, your leather pants.
Stop crying. I say calm down.
Hey, I dipped in on a live, no, not a live performance. I think it's the March of the Pigs music video, which is a single take, but it's is this my new look? Because it's black leather pants, black t-shirt, with the sheer sleeves, and then black gloves.
Yeah, duh.
Duh.
That's your new look?
Duh.
Fucking duh, dude. Yeah, that hell yeah, that's it. Back to some AIDS imagery with reptile. Angels bleed from the tainted touch of my caress. Need to contaminate.
Tainted touch? Is it taint?
Tainted touch. Taint of my touch? Of my caress? Tainty touch. Need to contaminate to alleviate this loneliness. Fuck. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't know. We're two tracks away from the end. I just need to get through this. Again, I want you to understand, I don't not like this album. It is a good album. It is exhausting. It is a very lengthy. How'd you get so long? It's a lengthy album of just absolute punishment. The downward spiral.
Well, so for,
oh boy.
For on that note, I want a little lighter note. He's working on, Reznor's working on the downward spiral. It's stuck. And he's stuck. He feels very isolated because he's working on a, you know, computer boy album. Beep, boop, boop, bop. In his home studio. So you don't get like a lot of people coming through. You know, Marilyn Manson, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he says, the quote is, I just wanted to kill myself. I hated music. I was like, I just want to get back on the road because I hate sitting in a room scraping my fucking soul. Exploring areas of your brain you don't want to go. That's painful. You write something down and you go, fuck, I can't say that. I don't want people to know that. It's so naked and honest that you're scared to let it out. You're giving a part of your soul away, exposing part of yourself. I avoid that. I hate that feeling of sending a tape out to someone. Here's my new song. Just cut my soul open. Check it out. Criticize it. Reznor, and then so, end quote, Reznor wanted to finish the album and get back on the road and touring. And then explaining this rationale to the legendary producer Rick Rubin, who of course would be the one to put Hurt in front of Johnny Cash.
Okay.
But Rick Rubin says, that's the stupidest fucking reason for doing an album I've ever heard.
Savage.
This is his parting advice. Don't do it until you make music that's a crime not to let other people hear. Somehow shaken by Rubin's advice, Reznor knuckled down and, taking time out to work with Manson, delivered the finished album almost a year after he had started working on it. Crazy. I think about that. It's just funny. I'm just like whining and being like, like the guy from Office Space. No, dude. What the hell?
Oh, boy. The downward spiral.
You're about out of it. You can do it.
You think I can?
Yeah.
I think I can. You get some kind of semblance of the piano melody from Closer here to open the track. And after all this...
Right, that motif that appears several times throughout the track. And it's a lovely motif. I like hearing it. That's another one of the little ways to keep you going through the album. Dun, 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 dun.
After all this chaos and pain and turmoil, we have a song about suicide.
And you're needing your shoulder as if the weight. Yeah, well, no,
I'm in physical pain from covering this album this week. Oh fuck, my shoulder's so fucked up from dealing with this album. Yeah,
Trent Reznor's psychic attacks on your shoulder.
Psychic Trent Reznor attacks.
Hope your shoulder hurts you. No, Trent, don't do it.
No, no, dude. Problems do have solutions, you know. A lifetime of fucking things up, fixed in one determined flash. All right.
Right.
That felt a little juvenile. Like maybe a poem that you would have written at 16 when you were depressed. You know, but... What?
It's true. It's true.
I've got a whole journal in here that I cannot open from high school. Don't so stupid. You think you're so deep, but you're just whack as hell. And it's not that this is whack. This is a sad song.
It's pitiful, though. It's pitiful. We can say that. Just like ultimately suicide is very selfish. Right. This ends up as a very selfish and a sophomoric sentiment.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and at the end, there's this, like, he's whispering some vocals here, and there's right. screaming in the background, but it's been muted, like ducked a little bit.
Yeah, which just makes it worse.
Because yeah, it makes it way worse. So
someone else's room, and that I think the production on the track for me sells what the track is accomplishing way better than what he's doing with his lame lyrics in the foreground. Like I want to shoot myself, get this over with.
Damn.
I mean, I don't actually feel like that, but I'm saying it gets the effect. It actually addles you, and that's the effect.
Do you hear how tired I am from this album? Okay. I just don't have anything. We're at hurt, and I'm physically hurt. We're at hurt now. This is the final track. It is so unsettling and so sad. This is the end. The person at this point has committed suicide in the previous downward spiral track, and here we are reflecting on it, it seems like, right?
Yeah.
So you've got the line, beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. So to me, that feels like identifying that whatever had a grip on this person's life that made him do this, and now it's all over. The human side is what was left, but you lost your life in this as well.
Right.
If I could start again a million miles away, I could keep myself. I would find a way. Just kind of identifying like I shouldn't have done this. This is not the right call. And did you finish this song, Exploder?
I didn't watch it. No.
I got about most of the way through. There's a series on Netflix called Song Exploder, and they cover Hurt, and there's some great interviews on here, and there are some really bare bones samples of Trent Reznor's voice here and just the music. And when it's isolated, you want to talk pitiful, it sounds, but this is a hard song. This is a deeply raw song. I don't know what else
they
to say.
They were talking about recording it, and it was in the studio that it was the room set up for Bob Seger, which is crazy.
The hell?
But Bob Seger was on Christmas break, whatever. And they didn't actually use Bob's mic with its pristine, pristine vocal chain. I don't know what that means. I'm not a producer, but like just the dynamics and the way that you could treat the voice and make sure it comes through. But he sang on a different mic because it was more intimate.
Yeah.
And the guy that was, it was just the two of them. It's just Trent and whoever was, you know, the recording engineer helping him record it. And he just said, we did three takes. I think I cried on every one of them.
Phew.
Like,
damn.
And he said that something that was cool that he was talking about how editing the takes is like, we never did single word edits. Trent was always against doing the single word edits because he's like, our voices and our instruments, they're human. And once you start chopping that stuff up too much, you're going to lose the emotion.
Right.
And so I think
well, there's
that's
the
true.
Phrasing. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
If a voice cracks in some area or if it gets soft for any reason, want to keep. Yeah.
Yeah. And he talked about keeping that vulnerability and the human quality. And I think that's obviously the power of this recording. Not only just as the rest of the album, the production is incredible, but all the braggadocio and all the, I want to do this, I want to fuck this, all that is finally stripped away, and he's just sad.
Yeah, I will let you down. I will make you hurt. Dog.
Yep.
I can't talk about this album anymore. I'm as depressed as I was yesterday now. I need to walk away from it.
There it
if
is.
You, if you have anything else to say about Hurt, I've got to stop.
No, it's good. I mean, well, hey. It got it done, right? The one that hits me is that discordant and not fully resolving big guitar. I'm not hitting the notes, obviously, but
I don't think you did it. I need to look something up.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's unsettling. It doesn't feel finished, and yet there's nothing left to say. And then he lets it sort of drift down into these wonderful like looping texture samples.
Textures were big for this.
Textures are really strong. I don't know if anyone, there are some ambient artists, maybe, but especially with how deftly all these kinds of things, all these elements. I mean, especially in 1994, this would have blown the lid off your head. Cause like I've spent 20 years listening to people who are like Trent Reznor's amazing. I'm going to try and do this. And not doing it because they're not him and they didn't make this album. And so to actually come back and hear this album and be like, oh, this is the album that has like inspired and obsessed decades of art. And no one's touched it. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they haven't touched it. And probably maybe Trent feels the same way himself. I don't know. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
Do you have a takeaway?
Mine
is Depraved.
Depraved is pretty good. I would say it's very quite literally Death March, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
there's a punishing quality that it was that's like you need to make it through this gautlet. Gauntlet another always be another good word too. It's just like It's a trial to get all the way through.
It really is. I didn't think it was going to be that challenging. I knew what to expect to some extent for Nine Inch Nails. I didn't expect it to be that path.
Yeah.
But I would love to step in and see what some of the later stuff was for. Are they still doing?
He's still doing.
I mean,
is
Nine Inch Nails?
Nine Inch Nails still has I think as recently as 2017 or 2018 have an album. So
okay,
yeah,
I have gone off the rails. I have chosen for next week an album we have not even discussed as a potential for next week. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
Queen, A Night at the Opera.
I think that's going to be good.
I need some Bohemian Rhapsody in my life.
Something that's going to be a little lighter.
I don't know anything about Queen except for Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't know shit.
I don't know Freddie Mercury.
It's Freddie Mercury, and that's all I know. So
fair enough. Okay.
Let's do Queen, A Night at the Opera. I'm very excited for something totally different. Hopefully, please be like a little different. Please, Queen.
Please, Queen. Don't have me suddenly like...
Yes, Queen. Please, Queen. Please. That was you Nine Inch... Thanks. I don't know why I said it so shitty. I'm sorry. Thank you.
hey, Reznor?
You fucked up this whole thing. That was Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral. It is out of our systems. I'm going to take an Epsom salt bath.
Wash this dirt off.
Well, yeah, wash the grime out from underneath my nails and my soul. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Queens, A Night at the Opera. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Later.